Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mark Zito, and on behalf of SiriusXM, I want to thank you so much for coming out to Stephen Talkhouse for a very special, very intimate episode of Smartless.
Here we go. That's Smart. Up. You guys.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
Thank you for being here. You guys aren't really fans. You're friends of ours. Yeah. So that's very nice of you to show up.
Yes, thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Drive all the way out here to Long Island.
Pay nothing.
Really nice.
Pay nothing.
Right? Sit here and be like, all right, yeah, entertain us.
We're very excited to be doing, we're going to do 4 live shows
every year.
We're going to do the
we're open to less, Scott, but that's fine.
Yeah. We do the regular sort of podcast on the computer thing, right? Yeah. What do you watch it or listen to it on, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do 4 live shows. This is our first one. Very excited about it. On top of that, we've got our white whale. People would ask me like who have you not interviewed that you want to Howard Stern, because he doesn't do this, and he's the man.
Yeah. He is the man.
We feel very, very blessed that he, and we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah,
is that your intro? No. Yeah, no.
I don't have an intro. Sean's got an intro. Look at the cards.
I wrote a bunch of stuff.
Hang on. I do want to say something. So
I'm like Fanning. Who's the little Dakota Fanning when she was a little girl? She was really overprepared in the best way. I did Cat in the Hat with her. Go on.
We got something to trim already.
Yeah.
The audience is riveted by that story. Fucking what? Dakota Fanning?
Well, she was really smart
and prepared.
I love that about her.
But everybody here knows who our guest is going to be, so there are not a lot of surprises. Yes. So there is one surprise that we do have today, just to kind of get everybody warmed up, to get us warmed up a little bit.
Yeah.
Something, Sean, you don't know about.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Don't worry, it's not your dad. Still can't find him. It's so fun because he left.
Yeah.
Top speed.
You know, he came
the
to
tears
the,
are still wet, huh?
I would tell you, he came to the last show of Goodnight Oscar in Chicago.
Yeah,
did I ever tell you
walk
that?
Us through that? This is kind of a sad story. I don't know if this we want to...
Yeah, all right. But anyway, we can get back to that again. Keep going.
It's a true story. He did.
He came to the last show. I didn't even know he was there.
Did he go backstage?
No.
No.
It was wild. Go ahead.
Did he have notes?
Yes. Yes, he emailed them to me.
That is pretty weird.
Wait, did you see him?
I didn't. My sister,
Tracy?
Yes. My that's correct. He emailed he posted on Facebook that he went to the last show, and that's all he wrote. And my sister, to bait him, like, don't you want to say something about your son that you haven't seen in 75 years? He said...
You look great.
Yeah, for 75? You know,
and he just wrote back, Oscar Levant, just like I remembered him. That was it. Isn't that wild?
Wow.
Anyway.
How long have you not seen him?
40 years.
And he's in the theater with you. You just starred in something. He didn't stick around and say...
No.
What a treat.
And then, wait. And then, check this out. 2 gay guys... came up to Scotty in the audience because Scotty was there. And they go, Scotty?
That's not the whole story?
No.
Okay.
They came up to Scotty and they said, oh, I just want to let you know we live next door to Sean's dad and I understand they don't see eye to eye.
Was that a shot at your mom? For those of you who don't know, Sean's mom famously has 1 fake eye.
Yes. Had.
Because hilariously she died.
So Sean should be an axe murderer, right? I mean, but he's...
Well, let's see how this goes.
He's the nicest guy. He's the kindest. We love him.
Well, we all have skeletons. Yeah. Go ahead.
We all have one-eyed parents.
one-eyed parents.
But so we do have one surprise tonight, just so, to try to spring us out of the hole of Sean's upbringing. So I've asked the guy to come here tonight just to do a little something before we get going.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
I swear to God, yeah. He's an Emmy winner. He's a finalist on America's Got Talent. He's been on the Jimmy Fallon program, amongst others.
Is that what it's called, the program?
It's called the Jimmy Fallon program. That's what the producers tell me. I don't know. There he is, Jimmy.
God.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Oh!
Please don't stand up. No, please don't stand. Please
Mr.
sit
Fallon.
Down.
Mr. Fallon.
I beg you to sit down.
thank you to sit down.
Fucking
love it.
God, we
it
saw the Olympics.
It wasn't an intro, Jimmy.
We get it. You're on NBC.
Yeah.
And you own Wayfarers.
Yeah. By the way, Jimmy, on all seriousness, you were great in Jurassic World. Yeah. I thought that was great.
Down again.
Again, down. But he is, he's done so many things. He's a big Dakota. No, she's not here, man. She didn't make it.
She's working on her stuff.
He's one of the world's most sought-after mentalists. He's worked with clients ranging from A-list celebrities, heads of state, Fortune 500 companies. Guys, please welcome the amazing Oz Perlman. Just to kick us off.
Guys.
Do a little something special for us.
What? I didn't know.
Yes.
Guys, this not is Dakota Fanning, unfortunately. I know.
This is a surprise to Sean. Sean knows
he was
nothing
waiting to be his dad. I'm sorry, Sean.
Wait, can I tell you something?
Tell me.
He sends me clips of you all the time.
That's what Will told me.
I'm obsessed. I think this is amazing.
Sean Let's see legit what I've got. Doesn't know anything about this.
Sean has no idea.
This is wild.
Wait, Will, you have my phone number, right?
Yeah.
And my email address?
Yeah, I got it all.
I don't like clips of things.
Do you know who this is? Do you know who this
You're
is?
Too grouchy.
He sort of clued me into it. It's our smart list Amuse-Bouche today,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah,
wait, of. This is so cool. This
Here's
is so cool.
Here's what I do, Jason. Supposedly, I read minds, but if I'm going to know how people think, right? And you know what they're thinking at the same time. Here's Will's skill. Everybody, where are my smart list fans in the room? Come on. Will notoriously knows dates, years behind, everything. You tell him June 2006, he knows what he's wearing.
That's
Jason.
Right.
Can't remember what he had for breakfast today.
That's
Am I right?
True. That's right.
Yes. Sean, Webby Award winner, best host.
I thought you were going to say Sean ate Jason's breakfast.
That might have been. Here's what I want you to do. I'm putting tasks out there. You're going back in time, thinking of somebody that these guys would not know, somebody from your past that they would not. You know what? Jason, go back in time. Think of the first girl you ever had a big crush on. Think to how old you were at the time.
I got it.
And tell them, because if I'm listening to this on my podcast right now, I'm saying this is set up, this is fake. Before today and me asking you to think of her, has it been days, months, or years since this person popped in your mind?
Years.
Years.
Yeah.
They didn't even know it was going to be on the show. Count the number of letters in her first name just to yourself. No, don't use your fingers. Jason, I can see your fingers.
Okay, you're yelling at me. I'm fucking nervous that you're going to guess it and I'm going to be all freaked out. This is coming out at your time, Howard.
Five letters. Was it five letters?
Yes.
I watched your eyes.
Okay.
He has not thought of this person in years. This is not set up, because if it was, it'd be going better. Tell us all, for everybody listening, I have written down, everybody in the room, don't say the name, but if you can see what I wrote down clear as day, everybody in the room say yeah.
Yeah.
Close your eyes for me, Jason. Close your eyes.
But if you get this, you're going to be in my life the rest of my life.
That is what I do.
I'm never going to let you go.
Like a splinter that doesn't leave.
Well, clearly you let her go, but go ahead.
You haven't thought of her in years. I wrote it down. Everybody in the room has seen it. How old were you at the time, Jason?
14.
Ooh, 14. And tell us, what was this young lady's name?
Paula.
And I wrote down, Paula, 14. For those who can't see Jason's face, he is in shock.
Yeah,
why aren't you a trillionaire on Wall Street?
It's my former job. Will, you thought
you're
of
wasting this at Stephen Talkhouse.
I'm monetizing. We're in the Hamptons, Jason. Trust me, I'm monetizing. Will, yes. You're back in time.
Yeah.
You're thinking of somebody. Jason's shook up, by the way. I wish they could see his face and not just hear the text of his voice.
That's the most surprised his face gets. By the way. You know, what do you think your face is doing right now?
Smiling?
It's very good.
Sean, how about this?
All right.
You read his mind. You were so confident with Jason, and then you had no idea.
Cookies.
Is there any way in the world, Will, that Sean knows who popped in your head when I asked you to think of somebody from your past?
No.
Okay. Take a pad of paper.
Yep.
Sean, here's the game plan.
Okay, I'm so scared.
I need you to act.
Good luck.
Sean, look at my hands,
yeah.
And can you tell everybody listening in, I'm going to pretend in a moment I have a crystal ball in my hand. Do I actually have anything in my hands?
Zero, nothing.
Everyone in the audience, is there anything in my hands? No. Sean will swear up and down that he saw a crystal ball appear in my hands, and in it, the name of your friend as a kid, or whoever this person is. Have you written down a name?
I have.
Can anybody see it right now other than you?
I don't think so.
Sean, look into Will's soul and tell him, what name did you see in that crystal ball? Tell him what, before I walked in here, we spoken a word in our life, Sean.
Never.
Tell him who's he thinking of. Say it.
Scott.
You fucking what?
Turn around, show the audience.
Fucking what?
I can't hear you in this room. Are we seeing the same show?
How is that possible? How is that possible?
Holy shit. That is unbelievable.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. Yes. Huge fan. Wow. Huge fan.
Incredible. So, guys, how do you introduce a man who needs no introduction because he's one of the most famous people on the planet, plus he's on the poster outside? He's the king of all media, the interviewer of all interviewers, the winner of Best Hair in America 4 years in a row. He's a great artist, a great painter.
More sincere.
Yeah, no, I lost my thing. And he is incredible. He's the most amazing person. And now his home for 20 years has been SiriusXM, which is now ours, which makes us roomies. It's the most incredible icon of all time, Howard Stern.
Ever.
Yes!
Oh, man.
You know,
all
my years in radio,
yes,
nothing works better on radio than magic.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. You guys are on to something.
That's a great note.
I told you, Arnett, not a good
idea. I don't want to come off like an expert. You know, I've only been doing this for like 50 years.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You've also made Howard the second guest.
I remember... Okay.
When's the last time you weren't the lead guest?
I know, and I remember having Amazing Kreskin on, and the audience was amazed as I described everything that was going on in the room. Yeah. The play-by-play was unbelievable. Yeah, he made a table lift, and I go, if you were here now, you'd see a table lifting off the ground. And people are like, no wonder this is such a great radio show. First of all, welcome to SiriusXM, the glorious world of SiriusXM.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the company, so welcome.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know how long I've been with SiriusXM.
Since it started. You started it.
When I started, we had 200,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And I remember walking around in, I don't even know where I was, somewhere in Manhattan, handing out radios for free, hoping that someone would take one.
Yeah.
And it was a harrowing experience leaving terrestrial radio and coming to Sirius, but it was the best decision I ever made.
Of course,
you weren't allowed, to talk about it too, right? When you were at the very end there, when you're on terrestrial radio, I remember that.
Yeah, it was a very strange time in my career. I was on regular radio.
Yeah.
And I somehow convinced them that it would be okay if I talked about the fact that I was leaving regular radio and going to satellite radio. And then they told me, okay. They said, don't mention Sirius Radio. Just call it something else. So we called it,
did for it, though, because we had all sort of heard that satellite radio was coming, and I was a little circumspect. And
hold on a second. Which one are you? You're Jason.
I'm Jason.
Okay. Jason. Yeah.
Then I was like, well, I don't know if I want satellite. I got to get a different radio for that. But when you went to satellite, I was like, oh, it's okay now. I'm going to go. When Fincher went to Netflix, it was like,
You do forget because things move rather rapidly. But it was a very strange time because there was an effort by regular radio to say what a failure I would be.
Right.
And they were putting out that anyone who went to satellite radio, your career would be over. You would disappear forever. So there was this big campaign to, discredit satellite radio.
Yeah.
But I knew deep in my heart that satellite radio would be successful. And now I look around, everybody's got a fucking microphone in their house.
Right.
Everybody's on the radio. You three.
I know, it's ridiculous. Right.
You want to hear the most aggravating thing?
Right.
But Howard,
I do love you guys. But.
Yeah.
Couple things.
Jason and I, and the only person I didn't know was Sean.
Right, it's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, and I do want to ask you about your classical piano.
Oh my! All right, and I want to ask you about your guitar playing.
Yes, I'm most impressed with your classical piano.
Well, you guys will get some time after the interview.
No, but here's the thing I want to tell you that annoyed me.
Yeah.
Can I tell you this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jason was over my house, and I have mad respect for Jason. I think he's a fabulous actor.
Incredible,
and,
one of the best.
Wonderful guy. He's overcome a million.
It's been a great time for you to call
me
Justin.
Problems
he he's had a lot of problems. A
lot of fucking problems.
A lot. Yeah. And he still has a bunch.
He's got a lot of problems.
Look at him.
We could go on all day. But, you know, I'm talking to Jason, and I'm feeling very good about my own career and everything, and Jason goes, you know, man, it's crazy. We, like, started this thing out of our basement, like a radio show. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Cool. And he goes, we started a thing, and, like, it was just the three of us sitting around, and we talk, and we just crack each other up and everything. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with it, man, but they're telling me it's, like, the biggest thing ever.
Oh,
like,
shit, I didn't say that.
Oh, yeah.
No way.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah. So I go, oh, this is great. Again, I spent my life.
Yes.
Like begging people to put me on the radio. It was rarefied air if you even were allowed on there. You had to work on your voice, this and that. You had to work on the content. You had to make sure you get people. Right. He's clowning around. Yeah. So, listen, it's over. What can I
know,
I
but
say?
You talk about...
You hide your bitterness really well.
I'm so bitter. So bitter. Yeah, right.
You talk about perfecting your craft. So how did you first meet the Whack Pack?
Oh, that's an excellent question.
It is. I want to know because you did. You found like the craziest group of people available and put them together. How did that come together, the Whack Pack?
Listen, when I was on the radio, it was brutal. In order to get an audience and to maintain an audience, every 15 minutes they take the ratings in radio. Uh-huh. It isn't really? Like this, like where you go, you know what, we have a lot of people listening. You know, it could be three people listening to this. Nobody knows, nobody cares.
Right.
But you're on the radio, and every 15 minutes, they take ratings.
Right.
And what are you going to do to hold people's attention?
But you found all these people like this, like kind of...
But look, I found people that I was interested in.
Right.
I'll never forget the day. I was on the radio, and I took a little bathroom break, and I walked by my green room. The lights went up. I'm looking at the room, and there he is, Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice.
Huh? Yeah.
You know my show? Jason, you ever hear my show?
High school, I listened to it a lot.
There was a guy named Beetlejuice who's very popular, even to this day on the internet.
Right. It's insanely popular.
Yeah, right. So... That, you know, I said, this guy's a star.
Quiet.
He's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, be quiet so they don't hear it.
This guy's going to be a star.
And sure enough, he was. No, I mean, I was always looking for interesting people.
I have a question about that. In early on, where did you get the balls to not give a shit about the consequences of what you were saying and what you were doing on air? Where do you get that from? Because do you think you would have that now if you started your career now with the same personality? Since we live in cancel culture, go ahead.
I believe I was technically insane. I mean, I don't, I can't
like
even.
Self-sabotage? Like you had like this
no,
level of
No, not self-sabotage. Well, here's the truth. In my family, words meant nothing. Uh-huh. My mother would say, actions only mean anything. And I guess I took her literally.
Yeah.
Howard, what would you consider would be the sort of the turning point in your career where you kind of broke through? Because, again, you started, you had all these, you keyed into this kind of thing, you know, with odd characters on your show. But what was the turning point where you felt like you broke through to a bigger audience?
I had a miserable failure in Detroit. I got hired to be the morning man at WWW Detroit, which are the worst call letters for a radio station. I get on there and go, WWW Detroit 74. I don't know what I'm doing. So I was hired to be the morning man. I had some success in Hartford. Not a huge success, but success.
Yeah.
And I got hired in Detroit. And there was a radio consultant who said to me, do not go to Detroit. There are four rock stations, and out of the four, the one that they want to hire you at, dead last. Nobody even, I would go to parties, and people would say, what do you do for a living? I'd say, oh, I'm the morning guy in W4. They go, oh, is that station still on the air? Mm. Nobody listened to this thing.
W4 was a short version of WWW.
W4, Detroit's W4, the worst station. So, yeah, I went on the radio in Detroit. It was a tremendous failure, and I said, what am I doing wrong? Yeah. And I sat with it, and I thought, I've got to really... just, I guess, lose all inhibition and admit to everything and just see where that goes. And when I went to Washington, D.C.
You kind of hit fuck it. It was like you, it was not going great, and you was like, might as well throw it all against the wall.
But I have to give the credit to also Robin Quivers. I met her in Washington, and she was phenomenal.
Hey, Robin.
The chemistry was great. And a program director put us together, and I went on the air with her, and I started to become very confessional, and people respond. We shot up to number one in a record amount of time.
Because it was real and honest. And
So that was the moment when you started getting really real about your own life, that started to change it.
Yes.
And did you notice being real about your life, because so much, you know, anybody who's listening to the show knows that you talk about what's going on in your life, what you did on the weekend, you new haircut, new clothes, whatever.
Wait a second. I was masturbating at least three times a day and talking about it.
I was trying to, my kids are here, so.
Sorry.
And I'm not sure there's been
a new
haircut.
How many do you have exactly?
I mean, we're looking into it, but the point is.
We got to find out.
The point is. You talked about so much about your personal life. Was there a point where talking about your personal life hurt your relationship? I don't mean necessarily even romantic. I mean hurt relationships because people were nervous about talking to you at a party or I know.
Well, it hurt everything. It hurt but I didn't care.
Right.
All I cared about was my job,
right?
Keeping that job and getting audience and ratings, uh-huh. And that is a disaster.
But do you wave at somebody on the street and go like, "Hey," and they're like, "Fuck, man, I don't want to say hi to him because I'm gonna end up on the show tomorrow."
Yes, I mean, not only that, I went through a very strange period of time. I don't want to get all heavy about this because everyone knows the show is not heavy.
I
don't want to get heavy.
We're gonna make you cry before you're out of here.
Okay, well, I'll do that. What it was is that I was very insecure about my career. I wanted this thing to take off in the worst way. Mm-hmm. And so I even had a policy about, I stayed in my home after I did my show. I never went out. I was insane. Mm. So I didn't want to meet anyone in show business because I was talking on the air about a lot of people and I didn't want, so I just stayed in my house. I planned the radio show, did it, and went home. And the stuff I was doing was so outrageous and so entertaining to the audience that it blew up. I mean, in New York, we had 25 million listeners, and one out of every four cars on the Long Island Expressway was listening to me.
Wow.
And it was pretty phenomenal.
But you have no...
life.
But
don't applaud. I had no life.
But Howard,
Bradley Cooper? He's so good looking.
But Howard, shifted. That,
if I looked like that, I wouldn't have to go on the radio and say shit.
And we will be right back. And now, back to the show.
Howard, that shifted, though, because... And it was about, I'm going to say, almost 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, where you started hanging out with a lot of people, and your life changed. And you became kind of one of the people that used to talk in a certain way, right? Not one of the people, but you became friends with a lot of people.
I did.
And you allowed celebrities into your life. You became friends with people like Jason Bateman from TV and film, who we all love.
Well, my dream was to be friends with Jason Bateman.
Sure.
And I said, there's only one way I'm going to get this guy on my side.
It's our dream, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it shifted. Like, I remember back in the, I mean, years ago, you remember I used to call Chevy Chase's house all the time. She used to drive him crazy. Yeah.
I was insane.
I know. But then it changes it because you have to meet those people right out in the world.
Well, Chevy ended up coming to my wedding, which is even more important.
Come on,
and
is that
got
true?
Up yes, and got up to make a beautiful speech to myself and my bride, and then stated to the audience that I had given him herpes.
Wow.
Which was really weird.
Wow.
But I loved it.
Audience is bigger today than it's ever been, and you're not doing all of those sort of shocking things. You're doing measured, deep conversations, long form interviews with very sophisticated people, and
because I think any good performer, and you guys are great performers and you know this, you must evolve. The show, you know, I used to say this. Now, Rush Limbaugh, forget the politics. You know, he had a very big following, but it was the same thing every day. You could predict what he was going to say.
Some people like that because it's like comfort and whatever.
Comfort to them. But for me, as a performer, I felt I want the show to be funny. I also want to be able to interview people. I want it to be broader. And I made a conscious decision to shift the show and change it around. And to me, it was way more exciting because the common thought was, well, Howard will go to satellite, and now the show's going to be so fucking filthy, and everyone's going to be out of their mind, and it's going to, and the strippers are going to be able to fuck on the air.
Did you miss those constraints?
Sorry, no. The constraints, by having the constraints off, I said, well, then it's no longer funny.
Exactly.
You know, regular radio was funny. The government was trying to shut me down. That was drama.
And that's fun. That's tension, right?
Yeah, but then I got to satellite. The tension wasn't there. So what do you do now that you have the ultimate freedom?
Right.
And I decided to shift the show, and I ultimately am more interested in the show now than I've ever.
I would say that it would, in a compliment to you, that it was less deliberate or contrived or strategic for you to, oh, let's switch it up now and give the audience something they're not going to expect. I think it's, and I haven't known you for, you know, 1,000 years, but it does seem pretty obvious that you have naturally just evolved into a more curious, serious, not as a pejorative, person who's interested in different kinds of questions and with different kinds of people.
Let's make it simpler.
You know, it wasn't like
it would be really creepy to be my age and still doing a show the way I did it when I was 30.
True.
When I was 30,
I was like, you weren't doing it as a ratings ploy. You were being sincere and genuine, and you
thought I was funny.
Yeah.
And I always had this idea that we could be really funny on the radio. That radio didn't have to be a bastardized medium.
No, but I mean now. It was not a ratings point out. And you are, hands down, the best interviewer in all of media.
All right.
Thank you. It's true.
Without a doubt.
Just take the compliment, Howard. Jesus.
I'm taking the compliment. No matter what. My psychiatrist said you should be able to take a compliment.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, like not. It doesn't matter whether it's comics or athletes or musicians or actors or whatever it is. You question them for us as us, and it's a layman's point of view, and it's very curious. And you're listening. You don't have a bunch of fucking cards with questions on it. You're engaged in a conversation, and it was a true inspiration for us. It really.
Sean is holding up all his cards.
By the way, let's let Sean get a question. He wrote 1,000.
Come on, Sean.
I have pages of them because I don't.
Sean and I don't really know each other.
That's why I wrote all this stuff down, and I start in my research of you because I am a big fan. I found all these things that we actually do have in common growing up. Issues with our dad. You don't like Italy, which you just went with Jimmy Kimmel. I didn't want to go either.
Right.
Bullying. Like as a kid, I was bullied too, not for being Jewish, but for being gay.
He's going to get to the question.
I was bullied for being gay, and I wasn't.
Yeah.
Crazy. I got bullied for everything.
Well,
I say I'm not gay.
Well, we're sorry to see you leave. leave that.
You seem very gay.
But the thing that I thought was fascinating, my mom had a glass eye, your dad had a glass eye, and neither one of us was allowed to talk about it.
Can I ask you a question?
Can you wait 1 second?
Is your mom still alive?
No, she's dead.
Okay. My father died 2 years ago.
I know. I'm sorry about that.
But I want to ask you a question. What would you do? Forget these other two guys. I'm asking you because you had a mother with a glass eye.
Yeah.
So my father had this glass eye. And I could go into that for 3 hours.
Same. There's so many things.
It's so fucking heavy.
It's so great. But it's also funny.
But when he died, I was given a box of his stuff. What do you mean? Oh, well,
yeah.
I told you shouldn't have an audience at this
guy. By the way, the same.
I open up the box.
Yeah,
of course.
It's my father's glass eye.
Wait a minute.
It's
gotta be. The same thing. When my mom died, my sister passed it around and repackaged it to each one of us. We opened. Oh, we got something from my sister. It's my mom's fucking eye.
Here comes the question.
Yeah.
So I go to my wife. I say, I got this eye.
The great Beth.
Beth Stern.
Where is she?
Where is Beth?
Oh, there she is.
Oh,
I love you
so much. Hi, Beth. Nice to meet you. I've heard such great things.
So anyway, here's the thing. So I turn to my wife, and I say to my wife, I go and I open it up, and my father's eye was such a taboo subject. My father never talked to me about anything.
That's right.
And one time I asked my mother, does Dad have a glass? And she said, listen to me. That's your father's story. Don't ask me. And I'm like,
how old were you?
I was a kid.
How old?
Okay, here's the deal.
Wait, how old were you when you still didn't know whether your dad's eye was glass?
Did it blink shut or did it stay open?
Did it blink shut or stay open?
It stayed mostly open, and also things would
You needed to confirm?
Mind.
Yes. Wear kind of shades, like a sort of like a tinted glasses.
It wasn't the confirmation of the glass. I wanted to know what happened with my father.
That's right, yes.
But I wasn't allowed to ask. My father would blow up. If everyone was afraid he'd get really angry.
I could throw that eye at you.
It could.
Yeah.
But here's my question. So what? So now I have the eye, and I said to my wife, I need to find out how to. I can't just take my father's eye and throw it in the garbage. Like, there might be laws against that. I don't know.
Right.
Are there? I don't know. So,
why wouldn't you want to save it as a keepsake?
No. It's
Beth. Where is it? It's a cat toy now.
She's got it in a locket around her neck.
She brought it here for you guys. No, it's a. So she says to me, throw it in the ocean.
What?
I go, I'm not going to throw my. I said, imagine my father's eye washing
your dad's never seen the ocean. Yeah.
He loved the ocean.
So what did you do with the eye is my question.
What did you do?
Well, I got it sitting in a box.
Yeah, of course you do. You got to hold it. You're not tossing in the fucking ocean.
No, you're right. No, my mom.
You brought yours on stage.
My mom. So it was same. We weren't allowed to ask about it. Irish Catholic, same as Jewish. You just don't talk. You stuff it all down.
Yeah. So there's our headline. Irish Catholic, same as Jewish.
Absolutely.
That's our
That's
our
the title of this episode. And so my mom.
There are a few differences between Irish Catholic.
Just a couple.
Jewish,
yeah.
But not gays and Jews.
Yeah, right.
So my mom, we weren't allowed to. So my whole life, I was like, I'd be at the store, and the checkout girl at the counter would be like, staring at my mom's eye. I'm like, Mom, they're staring at your eye. Shh, just shut up, right? Right. So then, 10 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, 35 years old. Finally, I'm like, Mom, what happened to your eye? And she still didn't want to talk about it. I found out after she died, she had cancer in the eye. They took it out. 2 years old.
Wow.
And then as she grew older, this gets really gross and funny. As she gets older. She gets, my sister and I read the medical reports. They took skin from her vagina to reshape her eye as she grew older. And then my oldest brother goes, I knew when I got upset with her, I wanted to fuck her in the eye. God.
Wow.
It's true. That's
it. This show has to be canceled. Ridiculous. That is very offensive.
We made a terrible joke about that once a long time ago, but I'm not going to repeat it here.
By the way, we're all talking about being honest. That's an honest story.
It.
That's true story.
Yeah.
And that's us making jokes about painful things.
Yes.
Her complaint after that, she thought that everybody looked like a cunt, right? Isn't that what she said?
When I was a little kid, I was five years old.
Sorry, yeah.
There was a guy on my block, a kid on my block, five-year-old kid. Said to me, he came up to me, he said, my parents told me your father has a glass eye. I was so freaked out.
Yeah.
We got into a fist fight. I did. It's probably the only fight I ever won. I beat him up.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But I could never ask. My father wasn't approachable like that. That's why it was so much mystery.
Did you ever get the story?
Yes, I did. It was a crazy story. What happened was I was so curious about the eye and everything about my father because I didn't know him. I would sneak into his room when they would leave the house, which was infrequent. Nobody ever left my house. And you would, you know, so.
No one could figure out the
lock. My father kept his eye with his porno. So the eye.
Wait, what?
My father had porno, you know, like he had some erotic books and things, you know.
Sure.
If you met my mother, she's not exactly putting out. My mother once said to me, you know, I'd prefer to be celibate, but your father has knees.
Oh, my God.
I go, really? That's gross.
Oh, but fucking somebody in the eye is then. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It was books, no movies, no tapes.
It was books back then, and the books were wacky, but the eye was staring at me. I wanted to read the erotic books, so I was all freaked out about it, the eye. But then finally,
she pops it out to go to sleep.
I don't know what went on, but in all seriousness, I finally talked to my mother about it. She wouldn't tell me, but I broke her down.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible accident when my father was young. He put some film in a bottle, and the bottle exploded. He lit it, and it exploded in his eye when he was a little kid. And my father had a fabulous attitude about his eye in the sense that I didn't see any evidence that he saw himself as handicapped. You know, he did his thing. So,
was he just proud? Or was that the thing he just didn't want to?
I think it was a big pain, for him in his life. Seriously, big pain, you know.
Wow.
And it was a big issue.
My mom would sleep, you know, her eye was constantly open. Oh. So when she slept, she'd be like, you know, like this. And I would approach the bed and I'd be like, Mom, she's sleeping. Oh, no, she's not sleeping. Oh, she's awake. Like, I didn't know whether. I'm like, can I get a glass of water? Oh, I don't. Oh, you're sleeping. Like, it was constantly. just like that. It was crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we would.
Where is the eye now?
My sister has it in a box.
Is it like a timeshare? You get it like. No, but do you get it? Like, if you want it for the holidays, you.
Yeah, sure, I could do it. She could pass it around. One really quick question. I've said this on the show before, but we used to take, my mom used to go bowling on Thursday nights, and we used to go upstairs. We used to invite friends over, and we'd had a chain on the door. And we'd go upstairs and get her extra eye. She had two. Yes, and she was in the box. And we'd get her, and they'd knock on the door, knock, knock, knock. And we'd open it just as much as the chain would go. And we'd stick the eye out and go, who's there? With the eye. Anyway.
I wouldn't have risked that in my house.
That's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
It's fun but dangerous if you knew my dad.
Tell me about Italy and Jimmy Kimmel. Did you like Italy? I know you didn't want to go.
I'll give you an exclusive.
Yeah.
It was, and this is the most boring answer ever. It was actually a bad question because I loved it. I don't have anything to bitch about.
You didn't think you were going to love it.
I don't like to travel. I'm perfectly happy sitting at home. Same. And if I want to see Italy, I'll go on the internet
or
and look
CNN.
At pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, I can. But, you know.
I went to Paris once and I was like, the Eiffel Tower. And I saw it. I'm like, got it, ready to go home.
Yeah,
it looks like the movies and the postcards got it. It looks the same.
Yeah, we had
but
a great
Jimmy and
time.
Molly somehow convinced you and Beth that this is going to be great.
No, I had said, you know, my wife wanted to travel, and I wanted to be a human being for my. I mean, I can't be in a marriage, and if my wife wants to travel, I can't say, well, go ahead.
Once a year, she gets
so
out.
So you go, and we ended up having a very romantic time, honey. Right? Romantic romance was in the air. Romance happened, and
barely confirming that. Listening.
I know.
Yeah.
Poor woman. Imagine, you know, think about it.
That was a nod. That
imagine,
was...
you know, imagine me crawling on top of you in Florence. I mean,
okay.
It's like a praying mantis attacking you. I felt for the woman. I did. But she's a good sport. She took it like a champ.
Jesus.
And I felt horrible. But honey, it wasn't so bad, right? It was over quick.
You're the king of the insects. You're like,
yeah, woo. Yeah. It's like, oh, like the fly, like brindlefly, you know.
Howard, do you have any? Is there any one interview you have that you regret? Is there anyone that you're like?
Oh, many. Yeah. Yeah,
what's the one
yeah.
you regret the most?
Well,
then?
Because I was an asshole many times. But you know, when I was on regular radio, terrestrial radio, whatever you want to call it, I didn't have the faith that if I did an interview, that my audience would hold. We had something like a 10 share, number one in New York, and I thought, well, if someone comes on the air and they're talking, I could hear the radios clicking off. That the only thing that might be compelling is if you know I was doing my thing. Which means I was not trusting of other people, that other people might have talent. So there were people, and I've written about this, the fabulous, most wonderful Robin Williams, for example, came on my show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I just was ridiculously insulting.
And why?
Because I was trying to be funny. Robin Williams is way funnier than I am. Let him be funny.
Right.
But being the insecure child that I was, and somehow having some connection with an audience where I was intuitive and thinking I could hear when they're turning off the radios, if somebody gave a long answer or it wasn't moving fast enough, if the rhythm wasn't right, I could hear the radios clicking off. And so I really had no business having guests on.
It's funny, you're really honest about that in your self-assessment of that time in your life now that you're older. And is that just a result of getting older, or is this a result of doing a lot of work?
It's a result of leaving terrestrial radio and going to satellite. It suddenly dawned on me.
Oh.
I work for a company now that has 100-something channels. As long as the person who's paying for a subscription is happy with the product, and if they're listening to me and I'm doing a long-form interview, and if it's not their cup of tea, they can go to a different channel on our service. And that freed me. That liberated me. Because it wasn't about me necessarily holding the audience.
The pressure.
If you enjoy listening to Robin Williams, great. Then we have you as a listener. But if you don't, there's a million other choices on satellite.
But don't you also find that you're no longer, your agenda is no longer to provide a show for your listener, but instead perhaps you hope that the people remaining listening to you on that particular day happen to be as interested in the person you're talking to as you are. In other words, you're not...
That's right.
Yeah, and it's a more honest sort of, you're not pushing, you're not pressing, you're just
Yes, but you couldn't have done that if you guys... started your radio, let's say you started a career in radio back in the day, this format would not have lasted. It would not be on the radio. It doesn't hold an audience en masse.
Right.
You know, Jimmy Fallon's sitting in our audience, right? When he does an interview, he can't do an hour interview.
Right.
He's
right.
got to sit there because he's dealing with televisions coming on and off and on and off. We're in a unique position. The period of time we're in right now has allowed us to sit here and have a real conversation, and we can play to a niche audience. Yeah. And so, you know, not to get too academic about it, radio, the old format of radio is gone. And I recognized that when I came to satellite, and I felt that was the innovation. I could sit and have a real conversation with someone like Robin Williams. And I have regrets that, yeah, it the format helped me to evolve.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I have an actual question for Jimmy. You know, seriously, no, to that point.
No offense, I think I'm the interview subject.
No, it's you've been great.
I guess I just haven't delivered the goods. Jimmy, why don't you take over? This always happens. Always happens.
It has,
with the guy.
It has everything.
Why don't you get up and do a few Gilbert Gottfried impressions? Go ahead, pal.
It has everything to do with what you just said,
okay.
Which is Johnny Carson used to have long sure. interviews, 20 minutes, half hour.
Yep.
And so, Jimmy, I was thinking about you because you're one of the best at what you do. Thank you for standing.
Sit down.
Have you ever had discussions about what Howard is saying about, instead of the 6-7 minutes you do? Oh, right, you don't have a microphone.
Oh, he's coming up to the stage.
Here we go.
He's never going to leave. You know that. Time. Yeah. Once Jimmy comes on.
They got a mic for him now.
Get the Fallon mic.
I love this
Jimmy
thing.
Fallon.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Come on, Jimmy. God bless
Come
you.
Come on, Jimmy.
Can I leave now?
No.
This is
Do you ever have the discussion about changing your format to do kind of where this feels like it's going, which is long form interviews as opposed to 6-7 minutes?
No, you can't do it. No. I wish that I could do a longer interview with certain guests. I do wish that I can get into it and talk for an hour. I'm jealous when I, you know, can listen to you.
When you hear a real conversation.
Yeah, I love it. Because then when it gets going, it's great. And even with an audience. Like you said, like this is we're loving this.
But here's the good news: I'm in the mood for what you provide and what Kimmel provides, what Colbert provides, you guys do it better than anyone.
And it's the other guys.
When I'm in the mood for a long form thing, it's like there's no one better. You know,
thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy Fallon.
One Gilbert Gottfried impression, for Christ's sake.
Thank you.
Right. Really. I just want to say, my beautiful wife Paula is in the audience. She dated you when you were 14. you haven't talked to her in a couple of years. Give her a call.
Paula Giovanni.
I love Jimmy very much, by the way. I want to tell you.
Jimmy.
Who doesn't love Jimmy Fallon?
I'll let you in on a secret.
And Nancy Giovanni.
Oh, Nancy's the best. Jimmy and I are going to go camping together on a beach, it's just going to be the two of us alone. And Jimmy, right? We're going to be in a what is that called? An RV, an airstream.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How much of your?
He thinks I'm going
to
go. Yeah.
How many of your guests? Because one of the other things that we get to do is we get to choose. We reach out to people that we're interested in talking to.
Right.
How much of that do you do, and how much of that comes in through?
We reach out to some people, but mostly, and this is probably to our detriment, but I don't want to have a lot of guests. We keep a limited amount. I think some of our strongest shows are when we're just sitting and doing our own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll be right back. And now back to the show.
I have to say, I tried to be a guest on your show for so many years. I kept asking my publicist every year, just hoping, like, are things good enough in my career where maybe I could be, and I remember... My publicist said, listen, Jason, we got news back. It's good news, bad news. Good news is, he says he's a fan. Bad news is, he says he just genuinely really has nothing he would like to know about... I'm paraphrasing, but it was... Absolutely.
You know what
true.
I was like I said, I've said this to Jason. I said, look, I could Google you and find out enough stuff.
Yeah.
I don't really need to sit and talk to you.
Google that about anybody.
Yeah, really, what have
I'd
you done?
I'd rather talk to a
Stop it.
No, but seriously, it's much more interesting talking to somebody who's got like a weird, fucked up.
Here's the thing. If I did a show every day where I just interviewed one guest, that would be fascinating to me. But there's also an audience in my group. that likes to hear us doing, you know, bits and shtick and like sitting and talking, Robin and I just talking. And I recognize that. So I don't overload the show with a lot of guests. But sometimes we do reach out. Like, you know, I wanted Joe Biden on, so we had him on. And I wanted Bruce Springsteen. I begged him to come on. I just wanted to come on.
Yeah.
That's and a white whale.
It was unbelievable to be sitting in a room with Bruce, and he's doing a concert, basically, and talking about how he creates songs. Yeah, so, you know, we do reach out, and there are people I just love talking to.
Do you miss playing music at all? Like being a disc jockey?
No,
and like,
it never was about music. You know, it's weird. I play music, and I talk over it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like I can't. Playing, when I got into radio, I was a disc jockey. You know, straight disc jockey. Yeah. My father would say, first you must learn to be a straight disc jockey, not all that nonsense you do. So so I went on the radio and be like, hi, this is Howard Stern, WRNW, Progressive Music from the Woods, and this is Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And so, you know, we would do that. And I hated it. I hated it. Even you had to segue you had to play a record and make sure there was no dead air. And
you
I was
had no
like,
autonomy. You couldn't launch bands. You had to play.
I played whatever I wanted, but it was horrible. I mean, it was a lot of pressure. You know, you had to get the commercials lined up. It was just you in a little room in a house somewhere up in the woods. Yeah. It was, you know, these were shitty radio stations, $96 a week.
Yeah.
And you played records and you announced them. And this is what I did. And I was the worst at it. I was the worst. There were no performers in my family. I didn't understand performance. I was not in show business. My father even said, you cannot be on the radio. You have no elocution. You do not enunciate. You read nothing.
You did have some sense that you...
I had no sense.
But you had
a
sense that your personality might be halfway entertaining.
When I'd walk around college, nobody seemed to pay attention to me. I think I had the worst personality.
You had no confidence that you were going to be somewhat compelling at all.
I would write letters to my girlfriend saying, I will be the world's greatest radio performer.
Why did you think that?
I have no idea. I don't know. I just knew that there was something there.
You weren't always this charismatic. You weren't always this talking. And
no, it took me years. That's why I resent this podcast. You guys are just on here talking. Yeah. I had to spend years.
We've been there 4 years.
It took me 10 years just to get conversational. Yeah. You know? It was very slow.
Yeah, that's
you guys are too talented.
But
in all seriousness, it was playing
years?
Records was horrible.
Were you a fan of music, though?
Huge fan of music. Yeah. You know, music meant more to me than religion. I never got a thing out of religion. But, man, when I'd hear the Beatles or the Stones or George Harrison, you know, My Sweet Lord, that stuff, that spoke to me. Moved me. Sure. And I was happy to launch a lot of bands. I was a program director for a while.
Yeah.
And I didn't even understand. I didn't know anything. A guy from a record company would call me up and he'd go, would you play our record? I go, sure. He goes, well, no. I'll play it for you. I go, you don't have to play it for me. I'll report it to Billboard. I didn't care. I was happy to
get starstruck around musicians?
I admire musicians and I know how hard they work at it.
But is that the group that would, if anyone was going to get you starstruck, that or athletes or musicians?
Yeah.
Who would be, who's the one that you haven't met, you'd be like, uh-oh, I can't talk?
Oh, geez.
Is it a Beatle?
Well, I've met Paul
and
Ringo, and they were great on the show.
Do you want to take a temperature of the room about the name The Beatles?
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys know about this?
Old Captain Brain.
What happened?
But let's take an honest thing of the audience. I didn't know my whole life. I thought it was the insect, the Beatles. I didn't know it was people who make beats, the Beatles.
B-E-A-T. Right. He was like,
clap if you were with me.
Oh.
Thank you.
Meanwhile,
did not know that till right now.
I didn't know.
That just sucked the air out of the room.
I want to thank the guys for that story.
Have you noticed the arrow in the FedEx logo?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that means. What?
All right, here's one you didn't know, Sean.
No, what is
Sean,
it?
Here's one I guarantee you didn't know.
Yeah.
You know the place you go for roast beef, right? Arby's, right?
Yeah.
Why is it called Arby's?
They got the meat or whatever they say.
No. Think about it. Why is it Arby's?
Roast beef.
Roast beef.
I didn't know that, but I put it
RBs.
Together.
RBs. Oh, I see.
Did not know that.
Look at Will.
We could do this all day long.
This is going great.
Speaking
what is happening?
Really glad I came on. Hey. By the way, these guys treat it like it's a TV show. I'm in a trailer. I'm waiting to come on. There's a warm-up act for the audience. I don't know from this. You just go on the radio.
First of all, I don't think we've said it yet. I can't thank you enough for doing this. You don't do this. I've seen you do it for Letterman. I've seen you do it for Kimmel. Yeah. You don't do this, and I can't thank you enough.
This is a really, really...
Thank
this
you.
Is,
happy to be here.
We really do, and just so you're not just hearing it from Jason, that you are the gold standard for us, and you are the guy we always wanted
to
get.
We talk about you all the time.
And honestly, this
is
a big deal.
I'm really honored. And Will, much to your point, for many years I couldn't take a compliment, but I do appreciate you guys.
I got a new one for you.
Okay.
Everybody knows you're recently 70. It's unbelievable.
It's so fucked up.
No. Yeah. You have not changed a... Beth, back me up here. Like, what are you guys doing? I know you're not out there, like, running 10 miles on the beach every day. Yeah. Is it just jeans? I mean, you look exactly the same.
I look terrible.
No, Howard.
The only thing I will say...
You don't look exactly the same for the last 30 years?
I can't even see a picture, but I will tell you one thing. I do not color my hair.
No, I know. I can tell.
I don't.
Yeah, but like,
this is it. And I have a gray beard.
He doesn't either.
You don't color your hair, right? No.
But you don't have. You're supposed to have like a belly. And
I do
like
have a belly. I have a belly and tits.
You're supposed to. Everything's got it.
I do.
I got a belly and tits, right, honey? You've seen me with my shirt off. She's busy talking.
By the way, Sam.
You want to go tarps off?
Yeah, wait.
You want to go tarps off? Should
we go tarps off?
But you don't look like you ache or you're sore. I can't fucking...
I'm a mess.
No, you're
not.
You seem like you're in great shape. Are you doing anything that...
Well, first of all...
Painting, let's get into that.
I do, well, yeah, I do. I paint. I like to paint.
It's incredible, the painting here. I don't know if you guys... Does people know? Okay. And the photography, it's like... And the tiny sketching with the magnifying glass.
I like it. God, I don't use a magnifying glass.
No more?
No, I never did. I never used a magnifying glass.
I saw your drafting thing. There was something...
I have a big magnifying, but I don't use it for that.
Okay.
Really.
I'm just telling you.
But
it was
there.
I mean, I'm not fucking crazy. Yeah?
No, you know, it was there. It was there. But, I enjoy those things.
I mean, it's really cool.
When did you start playing guitar?
Okay. So...
Short version.
I'll tell you why I play guitar, and I'm gonna blame Jimmy Fallon.
You gonna jam with Jelly Roll tonight?
No, Jimmy's here tonight.
Jimmy, stand up. There we go.
Jimmy Fallon. Hey. Jimmy Fallon says
gotta
to me,
be "Kidding me?
Here's no, what happened. 10 years ago, I turned 60, and I said I either want to play the guitar, or I want to learn to paint.
Oh, and you
I never drew. I never, you know, did anything. For some reason, I wanted to paint in the worst way.
So that's all in 10
years. I began to study watercolor, painter. And I really focused on it. I mean, and you know as a pianist that you just have to focus on it. Yeah. It's not that people have some sort of natural ability.
Correct.
It's the work.
That's
you
right.
have
the
to work at it.
Exactly
people
right.
go, oh,
Sean
I don't
been
have
focused
that.
Focus on the pianist his whole life.
Yeah.
And I'm an expert.
Just you, two laughs for that. I thought that was pretty good.
It's a tough freaking crowd.
We'll sweeten that in the edit.
Yeah. It's okay to laugh.
But, you know, I enjoy those.
But I applaud you wanting to research and find other things. Not that you are older, like 70
no, this
is not
is what
old,
it is.
But that you pursue things
that
still challenge you.
Somebody your age
you.
Is willing to do new things, is what you're saying.
Well, it's true.
No,
and by the way,
congratulations.
That fucks my head up.
Yeah.
Because what I said to my wife, I want to learn guitar, but I feel foolish because of my age. Like, what am I trying to do here? No. I don't want to be a rock star. I don't. Yeah. I just want to understand
challenge
music.
Challenge yourself to a new hobby.
Because I love musicians,
and
I love what they do, and I want to understand that language.
Let's do a duet sometime, piano and guitar.
Do you play minuet in G?
I do.
All right, then we can do it.
Wait, are you playing classical guitar?
No, but I don't play classical guitar.
Yeah, he's starting 12-string guitar, man.
No. It hurts the fingers, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, look at the tips of my fingers. Look at those calluses.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You'll
how
let
much
Jason
are you playing
touch
a day?
You.
Well, I'm on vacation now, so I can play.
From guitar?
No, from work. I'm on vacation from work.
Okay.
So I can play, I some days, 5-6 hours.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
Wow. So you must be good now.
Who's
I'm not
good.
Who's
I'm
your
not
favorite
good.
Guitarist?
Oh, geez, there's so
one, many. One, just name one of them, a few of them.
Well, I mean, you got to say Hendrix. You got to say Jimmy Page. Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Page. Now I have even more appreciation for Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
I was playing one of the most beautiful love songs, Thank You, by Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And the intro to that. Mm-hmm. And you sit and you realize this guy wrote this. Excellent. Excellent.
Thanks,
that,
guys.
Was that you singing or playing the guitar?
Keep that applause up.
But you realize how brilliant it is. And in order to get to that level, you've got to play every day for hours and hours. And I'm mad at myself because when I was younger, I didn't allow myself to practice music, which Sean did when he was smart about it.
Well, when I was younger, I had so many, I don't know why I reacted this way, but so many adults, when they found out when I was like 5, 6, 7, 8 years old playing piano, practicing, they'd go, oh, you know what? I wish I would have stuck with it over and over and over. All these adults telling me that. So I was like, there must be something to that. So that's what made me stick to
it. Was there a fork in the road where had you stuck with that instead of radio,
had to be radio for me.
So it was never like
I was 5 years old. I announced to my family, I will be on the radio, which was ridiculous.
In.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it. And
but your dad was a sound engineer. Right?
Yeah, well, he was a radio engineer.
Radio engineer. Yeah. So that part of it made sense.
Yeah, but listen, my father didn't spend a lot of time paying attention to me or interacting with me. And I used to sit.
Mine did.
Well, I would watch him. Yeah, he was focused on you. No, but he would when I would see him commuting to work, and he'd put the radio on, and Bob Grant was on, who was this conservative broadcaster, but the guy was mesmerizing on the radio. And I saw the way my father listened and shushed me, told me to shut the fuck up so he could hear Bob Grant.
Shut up.
I said, so that's how you get. That's how you get someone's attention.
Sit down,
you get
up.
On the radio.
So you did it to get your dad's attention.
I think so, yeah.
Just to follow up on that, if you don't mind. Jesus Christ.
Sorry.
What was the moment where your dad, obviously, you had incredible success in radio. Was there a moment where was there an actual moment where he went, holy shit, Howard?
Yeah, I think my mother put him on. You know, he just said, oh, okay, I love you. You know, he was not, my father grew up in the Depression.
Yeah.
He had nothing. When I say nothing, it was like literally no shoes. You know, his father worked in a sweatshop as a pants presser. My father was a very deprived guy. And he didn't have a lot of room for emotion. I think he probably had a lot of bottled up emotion, but he couldn't express it, and he didn't know how. He didn't have the facility. But I would have loved to have known my father.
Why do you think you're so well adjusted?
I'm a mess. I'm still with a psychiatrist.
Beth wouldn't be with an idiot.
I didn't say I was an idiot. I said I'm fucked up.
No, you're not.
Honey,
honey,
come up here and tell people I'm fucked up. Please come up.
Well, do you?
She says I'm a lot. Honey, please. You don't want to come up.
I don't think that people know, like, if there was one misconception of you, do you have any idea what that might be? I mean, I don't know, but I will say that for me personally, given your edge of humor, it was really exciting to get to know you a little bit and see how incredibly soft and chewy you are on the inside, how incredibly sincere and genuine and attentive
I said was, you know, it was unfair. You used to go around saying, oh, well, that's an act on the radio. I had a lot of anger.
You, obviously, but there's a choice to, like, not be fucked up and just know how to manage
that. Yeah, but my attitude about radio, and I say this over and over again, was, I just want to make people laugh.
Right.
Yeah.
I want people to have a great time in their car. Whether if it's a compelling interview, great. But if I'm sitting there and I'm being really funny and I'm doing something good, that's what I'm trying to do. So I never did anything out of malice.
Yeah.
I did it because I thought I was genuinely funny.
Right.
Right.
Was I genuinely funny? Sometimes not.
You were
not.
Speaking the
sometimes,
truth. Yeah. You know, your observations were spot on.
I was speaking my
on,
truth.
But it was sometimes painful for folks, and that was the funny part.
Part of that, being honest, though, I remember when you spoke about your health scare, about having a little spot on your kidney, thank God it was nothing. Right. And that was, you revealed, like, that was one of the few things that you did not share with your audience, because you've always been so open and honest with your audience about everything. Where is that line, and is there anything?
I'll tell you why, and you guys probably know this from doing this now and having a popular show. You know, if you go on a radio and you say, listen, I could potentially, I have this thing, and they're telling me it could be cancer, a 95% chance. You start to get letters from every know-it-all in the audience. Yeah. Listen, my mother died. You're fucked. Yeah, you're this. You're that. Yeah, yeah. And I'm neurotic. I am neurotic about my health. I don't want to know. Where's Bradley Cooper? I just want to look at him. Come on. You know what
Come
I
on,
mean?
Bradley. Set up.
There he is. There's Bradley. Bradley. Gorgeous. Bradley.
Look at that. That son of a bitch. So good looking.
He's gorgeous.
I love Bradley Cooper. I don't mind saying it.
We all do.
No, there are people. Sean doesn't love him.
Bradley, but I love you.
Another one
can
of
I
the
tell you
most,
Bradley Cooper story?
We'd love
kind.
To hear a Bradley story.
Can I tell
story,
you a Bradley Cooper
if it's
story?
Positive.
One of the greatest moments for me on the show, a personal, because you asked about people I interviewed. I was interviewing Bradley, and at the time, Bradley had just finished a run on Broadway.
The Elephant Man.
The Elephant Man.
Brilliant job. Absolutely brilliant.
And I am a fan of The Elephant Man. And I said, you know, and Bradley's so serious about The Elephant Man. He has serious Elephant Man hang up. He goes, you know, I just want you to know I don't joke about The Elephant Man. I said, I'm not going to joke, but I would like to do The Elephant Man for you.
And
I would love if you would come back as your Elephant Man.
Yeah.
And so I said, oh, you're so kind. Mm-hmm. You're so full of kindness. So beautiful. And Bradley looked at me and I said, he's either going to walk out. And he goes, oh, thank you. And we had a moment where we were both the Elephant Man, immersed in our character. And it was
one of
the single biggest highlights.
Radio Magic.
Radio Magic.
That's
you acted
Look it
with,
up.
You got to act with
I
Bradley.
I got to act with Bradley Cooper. Very few people. This guy's one of our best actors.
He is.
Rarefied air. And
without a doubt. And one of the greatest filmmakers we've got. Maestro is incredible.
That's right. And when he saw, he was so inspired. Tell him, Bradley, how good I was. He loved it. Never saw such acting. I've had no training, by the way, as an actor.
What?
That's right.
How many times did you audition for Private Parts?
Yeah, because I was going to say.
You want to know something about Private Parts? Here's the funny thing. So in developing.
What a movie, by the way.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Howard, it's a great movie.
It.
Thank you.
It is.
It's so good.
But I got to tell you a funny story about you, because this leads into it. It's insane. You know.
Closer to the mic, please.
Yeah.
So I wrote the book.
I had no clue when they said they want to make a movie out of it. How am I going to make a movie out of this thing?
Betty Thomas?
Before Betty, I was involved in writing some of the scripts. We had other writers and this and that. There were 25 full drafts of this thing, and one was worse than the next. And my agent at the time, who just passed away, and
Don Buckle, he's great.
But he said to me, these scripts are so bad, you'll be laughed at. So the movie studio said, listen,
Paramount?
Where Reicher Entertainment put up the money, and Paramount was the distributor. And so they said, listen, this is crazy. The money that we're spending on these writers, and you're not accepting any of these scripts, we're going to hire Jeff Goldblum to play you, since you won't do
that. No way. Is that true?
Great Jeff Goldblum.
No way.
I looked him in the eye, and I said, you know what? I would pay to see that. I would love to see Jeff Goldblum as Howard Stern. I think it would be terrific. But anyway.
At this time, was there a plan for you to play the part and they wanted to actually go another direction?
No, but they were so frustrated with me because I had written into the contract, and again, this was my agent's brilliance, they couldn't make the movie unless I had full script approval. And I wrote half the scripts and they sucked.
That'd be so great to just shoot some scenes today with Jeff Goldblum.
Absolutely.
And just put it on the internet?
Yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun.
You want to know one of the most thrilling things in my career? Speaking of that.
And then we got to go.
Oh, you got to go?
No, after
you
that.
You got to go.
After
you have a hard out.
You have a hard out.
People are really tough about it.
Yeah.
I have a hard out.
Yeah.
No, I do?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm very busy. I have to go home and paint and play the guitar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm busy. No, I sit at home and stare at the wall, and Beth looks at me. she's not allowed to leave the house. Didn't you know that?
Will you go home tonight and just turn on the TV and?
Oh yeah, I've got the advanced copy of next week's Bachelorette.
Oh no way!
And I cannot.
Hey, do you watch Traitors? Do you watch Traitors?
No, Bachelor. I'm Bachelor Nation all the way. Anybody else with me?
Yeah.
Look, Jimmy Fallon's with me. Bradley.
Sure.
Well, these people have a life.
I love it,
Bradley.
Love
you do
it.
Not.
Amanda loves it.
Bradley doesn't watch it.
Bradley watches Bachelorette. That's the secret. He doesn't want anyone to know.
All right.
Yeah, he loves it. What time is it?
What time for you to go?
6:30.
We've gone way over. Howard, we've taken up way too much of your time.
You're very kind of driving.
We were a success?
Yes.
This is a great success.
Oh, my God.
We're going to record
Honestly.
Everybody take a nice break. We'll record in about 20 minutes.
What do you mean?
Great rehearsal.
What are you recording? Tell me. Are you
this is a rehearsal.
Is the show actually over? Do I leave and then you keep talking?
We're going to do a little wrap up.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about how great you are once you leave.
Maybe I should listen in. Yeah. I'll sit here. I won't say a word. Go ahead. Let me hear what you guys do. And I'll tell you what I'll do.
But here's the thing.
Every once in a while, interrupt, and I'll just go, that's not good radio, or that's really good radio.
I'll tell you what we will do.
Do you mind if we cut your mic?
Not at all.
I was
a judge on America's Got Talent.
I know. Fantastic. Yes. It's the only reason I watched.
So, by the way, the guy who did the warm-up today, they had a warm-up. Oz.
Yeah, Oz. Yeah.
I wanted him to win the entire season. He did not win that season. He should have. He's fabulous. Yeah.
He's amazing.
He's phenomenal.
Oz Perlman.
You know what you can...
A name built for show business.
Here's what you can do. While you're being quiet and pretending that you're not here when we're doing...
No, I'm not going to do it. If I have to be completely quiet, I'm not doing it.
All right, you can talk a little bit, but I want
I
you to
that
think
under
about...
Protest.
We might embarrass you if you stayed and heard how much we were going to praise you.
Can I say something about you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is going to hurt.
It's got to be kind.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
I'm very excited that you're part of the SiriusXM fans.
We are
so
too.
Are we.
I wish you a lot of success.
Thank you.
Not too much success, but a lot of success.
Sure.
And no, seriously, it's great to have you guys in the family.
Thank you for blessing us into it and by doing this.
Yes.
I understand the Sirius stock's going to go over $2.90 now that you guys are here. God bless. I can't wait. Oh, that stock, I'm going to be so wealthy. Yeah.
Oh, you guys, please help us thank Howard
Stern.
Thank you.
Great Howard Stern. Thank you, everybody. I can't get out of my chair.
Howard Stern, keep it going. Keep it going. The one and the only. The king of all media. Radio, podcast, television, film.
He is the king of all media.
They had to raise the ceilings of the talk house just for him.
Yeah.
All right.
That was surreal for me. I've never met him. I didn't ever get to talk to him.
Was he what you thought he was going to be?
Yeah, I was really, really nervous. I was really nervous.
Was he what you thought he was going to be?
Yes, I thought that...
How was he different than you thought he was going
to
be?
I didn't know he was going to be so relaxed and
it's
easy
so
to
great,
talk to. Yeah,
right?
I thought he was going to be like, so what do you guys got? Let's see what you guys got. And he wasn't like that at all. You know,
no.
Because he's the king of all of it.
But he was also he's incredibly generous and empathetic and probably knows that we're nervous and we're dumb and we have a new show and he's the king.
That's why I have 75 cards.
He had a tremendous amount of candor.
He immediately took the
reins and helped us and he started talking.
And you wrote so many questions because you were so nervous, right?
Seriously.
Sean was upstairs and we're like, what the fuck? It's an hour.
Yeah, just like writing.
Any questions you didn't get to that we should listen to?
Tons, tons.
No, anything you're really pissed you didn't get to?
Let's see. I mean, we talked about a lot. I want to talk about Italy a little bit more and what, like his vacation, like was his ideal vacation.
We'll bring Jimmy on and talk about that.
Okay. Anyway, so I love him though. I've been a huge fan. And by the way, I didn't share with you guys the first time. What are you looking at?
Nothing. I'm just
starting
to think.
I feel like you're working right
now. I am. So the first time.
Can you feel it coming?
Yeah, he starts to work on a buy.
So you can see his brain. You can see it in real time.
He tees himself up for it.
Right.
So the first time.
But it's too early to do it now. We're still doing wrap up.
We're wrapped up.
Okay, we're wrapped up. We're ready to go.
And we got Jelly Roll coming up, which is so exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so here's the buy.
So the first time I was ever here in the Hamptons was only like 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
And that was the first time ever. And I stayed with Will at his house, which is not very far from here.
Okay.
And
this is going to be terrible.
And this is going to be horrible.
Dude.
And Will lives so close, so I was just going to ask Will, did you drive yourself over here, or did you ride your...
Bicycle!
Jesus Christ. For the live
Sorry
show?
Sorry about that, guys. Sorry about that. But the interview was fun, was it not?
It was really
fun.
Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you so much for coming, you guys.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Stick around for Jelly Roll.
Thank you guys. And let's go enjoy some Jelly Roll.
Yeah, Jelly Roll. Please stick around for Jelly Roll.
Jelly Roll is performing out there. We're so excited.
Thank you guys.
Smart. Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarv, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smartless.